Hello, my name is Junie, and welcome to the Theta Game Podcast. I'm not a financial advisor, and nothing I say is financial advice. I'm just a normal retail trader, just like you. I'm not certified or a graduate of finance, just a trader that started on Wall Street Bets years ago. I've lost a lot of money and made all of it back and more after finding a system that worked for me. You can view all my trades for free at thetagang.com/Junie, no signup required, and email me any questions that I'll answer on the podcast at junie@thetagang.com. Lastly, I stream on Twitch every weekday at least an hour at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Come hang out, ask me questions, vent, or just chill. It's a positive environment, and everyone is welcome at twitch.tv/realthetagang. I've been using the TastyTrade trading platform since I started my ThetaGang journey 5 years ago, and it feels surreal that I've partnered with TastyTrade so I can focus on bringing you guys and girls the content. If you'd like to sign up and use TastyTrade for your trading journey, you can use my link in the show description or use the ThetaGang referral code, that's one word, all caps, when signing up. I use TastyTrade every Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, where I chat and trade with viewers live every morning. Go again to twitch.tv/realthetagang if you're interested, join the chatter and morning hangout. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. Yo, what up? It is Thursday, 1:53 p.m. After the bell. Today was a pretty mixed bag when it comes to just the trading world. Right now I'm trying to just pull up buying time, saying some random things. The SPY, or S&P 500, is down 0.23% and QQQ is down 0.16%. Today it looks like a lot of semis were up. There seems to be some hype building up around Blackwell, NVIDIA's new architecture for GPUs and AI related stuff. Some other hot news, no pun intended, is nuclear stuff. Nuclear energy is a source of clean energy. I know, you start to think of, oh, it's radioactive, that's not clean. That's not really the point. The point is the energy is really easy to make. And you can make a lot of it, though it is just a tiny bit dangerous, but we're always improving nuclear technology day by day. So nuclear energy is being seen as the solution to power these large data warehouses, large server racks that these AI workloads need. So you could think of, if you're not that tech savvy, you hear all the time about NVIDIA and how it sells chips to companies that do AI workloads or that train AI models so they become smarter. You need chips to be able to do that, but you also need to keep the electricity on for those chips. And that amount of electricity is no joke. You need a much larger amount of electricity to run a warehouse full of these chips that are plugged into the wall, essentially, to do these very expensive computations. And we're seeing nuclear energy be a main source of energy or the solution to tackle this issue. Because while regular power is great, we do need a more efficient means of creating energy from nuclear because it's also clean. There's just, I'm not an electrician. I'm not that tech savvy in terms of energy. But the form of energy that's created by nuclear creates less carbon emission than the typical way that we generate electricity. That said, this week I have started trading VST and CEG. I think these are the two main powerhouses, haha, no pun intended again, for nuclear stocks. CEG is the more in the news as of recent with their Microsoft deal of them opening a already closed down power plant. They're reopening again exclusively for Microsoft to use to power their workloads. And that's maybe injecting $10 billion over the X amount of years, however that contract is going to be. That deal can also still fall through. I mean, something could be wrong with the power plant, but I'm sure CEG, with all the years of experience that they've had, everything will go fine. But the power plant is not open yet, and it's not delivering energy to Microsoft yet. This is just a pen-to-paper deal so far. No real energy transaction has started happening yet. So This has, from what I can tell, has brought a lot of life into energy, being a sympathy play for AI. Because it's cool if you run a giant tech company and you could do all these AI power workloads, but if you're killing the planet faster than, you know, you're being productive, then, you know, what's really the point? So we're seeing that AI companies are looking to be carbon free with their day-to-day operations, and nuclear will get them there. You know, because you're hearing it from the podcast, okay? This has been the sort of this news has sort of been out for maybe like a month now. I'm just now covering it because, you know, I'm always in my semiconductor AI world. I don't usually tend to venture out, but I thought, you know, this week it was pretty flat, and so I started looking at other stocks. And I saw, yeah, nuclear and energy and all the ties it had with AI, so I did a little bit more digging there. Again, CEG, the one that has the Microsoft deal. CEG is, I'd say, the biggest and most blue chip of the nuclear companies. I'm sure it's not considered a blue chip company, but when it comes to nuclear, that's the vibes I get from doing my studies on different sort of nuclear technologies or nuclear companies. VST is pretty expensive. It has a P/E ratio, I think, of about like 90 something, which is extremely high for a energy company. Yeah, it's P/E ratio now of about 103. And again, that's insane, I think, for a energy company. But they have been doing a lot of recent investments in nuclear energy. The sort of two summaries I can give about VST and CEG. CEG wants to do share buybacks and make their already existing plants more efficient. VST is putting more money into their nuclear sector so they can like maybe expand their nuclear. CEG is right now not considering expanding. They're more interested in making themselves more efficient with what they have and giving back to the shareholders. VST is more about growth. So if you did want to invest into a nuclear stock, I'd consider maybe CEG is the more responsible one. VST, it has definitely gone up a lot. I never like to say overpriced or overbought. I just truly do not believe in that term, at least most of the time. But yeah, VST has signs of it being maybe overextended. But of course, the stock market can be irrational longer than you can be solvent, which is why, just because the stock has gone up so much, we don't just irrationally buy puts out of nowhere, right? So stocks can stay elevated, stocks can keep going up. You should really just focus on what your thesis is for the market. Just as a smaller, I guess, tidbit I found is a company called NuScale Nuclear, or NuScale Power. Yeah, NuScale Power. Stock ticker is SMR. They are down 3% for today, probably because of the Wall Street Bets post. There was a Wall Street Bets post talking about how NuScale Power could be the next big thing. I see, I'm literally reading from a Motley Fool article that's was posted yesterday about NuScale Power. And yeah, it's worth checking out. They do a nuclear power in very small amounts. So if you wanted to bring nuclear power to in a very small scale somewhere remote, then they can do that for you. But they are still in the passing the regulation phase. So they don't make any of these small modular power plants yet. They are now just still getting regulations and licenses and all that legal barrier stuff to start building these. I think it's, I mean, seeing that like data centers can be of all sizes, it doesn't need to just be for billion-dollar companies. I could see this company fitting in at some capacity, but it is kind of hard to tell just how much they should really be valued here, because we're not going to see any sort of meaningful return until probably like mid 2025, it looks like. So this is definitely even more risky than VST, but I thought I'd mention it here just because, you know, we're homies with Wall Street Bets. So with that said, yeah, I've been looking a lot more into nuclear stocks. Does that mean that you should be looking at nuclear stocks? Probably not. Like, if you've never paid attention to them, you don't want to do it, like, just don't do it. Like, I think I'm just really in a mode where I'm trying to expand my trading skills into different sectors. I've always really felt some type of way about energy sector. Like, I've always felt like it's never paid enough, especially in terms of premium. But now that I know that nuclear energy is the main source of energy that's going to be powering AI, I'm a lot more open to it now, because it clicks better now to me instead of just like investing in some random wind turbines, you know. So I get it. I'm trying to get better at it. I opened my first CEG and VST plays this week, like ever. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play out. I'm already ahead of my CEG play. I'm up $335 on a put that I sold for $845. It has 29 days left. I got these $300 in like 2 days, which is pretty good. I'll probably take it off the table tomorrow if it reaches like 40% or 45% or close to 50%. VST, I'm currently down on by $75. I did a buy right, but I've already been profitable on a earlier cash secured put that I closed out for like $200 or so. Nuclear, still a very, very hot topic. I don't know. There's so many uncertainties just about how the rest of the purchase power agreements are going to play out. Those are the sort of contracts that say, hey, let us use one of your reactors to power just us. That's a purchase power agreement similar to Microsoft purchasing power from Constellation or CEG. And we're going to see just how these future deals unfold. I think there's not a standard energy solution right now for data centers. I think that is the point of contention for a lot of these energy companies. I do suspect that any of these nuclear companies, and there's a good handful of them that are public too, they all sort of focus on different things. But if they, if any of them flip a deal, and because these deals are usually, I mean, in terms of Microsoft, they're exclusive, you have to pay a premium to say like, hey, let us be the only ones that get this power. That's way better margin for the energy companies, which is amazing. So a windfall plus a higher payout is amazing for these energy companies. It's just very, very hard to tell which one is going to get the contract, because again, there's no set standard. There's no one company that is like the one that you get the energy from. Constellation's the first big headline one, and we'll see if any other companies follow suit. Talking a little bit about the rest of my portfolio, I have a grip of cash secured puts and a buy right on NVIDIA. I'm pretty bullish about the Blackwell architecture, just the hype generated around that. NVIDIA also announced this week that they have like a ChatGPT sort of competitor. And I'm all about it, man. If they want to compete, they should compete. And if they want to have it in-house, dude, I think they have all the money in the world for the best R&D and the best team. So any chance that NVIDIA can make money from software, I am so in it to win it. I'm down. I see more reason for NVIDIA to go up than to go down. I see NVIDIA has a strong case to at least trade flat, which is why I'm being more bullish on my position for NVIDIA. Because as you guys and girls know, I'm a really big fan of buy rights. When you buy 100 shares and you sell the cover call. But because I have a feeling, and this is only a feeling, it's not like a fact by any means, because I have this feeling and this thesis that NVIDIA would trade flat or up, I'd rather be in puts, because I'd rather be more flexible on the way up than down. And when I say puts, I mean cash secured puts, not long puts. Talking a little bit more about my portfolio, I am not in AMD. That is something I should just mention. I've really just been focused on NVIDIA, and I think NVIDIA trading at 120 just makes it a little bit more predictable of a stock to trade. And I'm a huge fan of predictability when it comes to profits, because if I could just do the same thing over and over again and guarantee this profit, I would do it. But unfortunately, trading something very volatile, you don't get that luxury. But NVIDIA trading at this like 118 to 122 level, and 120 being in the middle, it feels very in line with where I want to trade. So I've been focusing on putting enough gas on the fire for NVIDIA to make some premium while we're here. And to note again, I'm not trading AMD, and especially not Intel right now. I am, however, still bullish on cybersecurity. I think cybersecurity is going to be more important than ever as we go forward, especially with AI getting more and more hype, more and more skilled people behind it. There's a lot of great people, but there are the handful of people that are scary and that will use it for bad things. And yeah, you're going to need to benefit from AI, which cybersecurity very much leans into, but we're going to need to make things more secure. I think internet security is just now turning the corner and reaching the mass consumer. You see that in companies like Redacted or any of these other companies that kind of take your information off the internet. I'm sure that your favorite YouTuber has mentioned some sort of ad regarding this, like if you wanted to take your private information offline, or you wanted your information maybe taken out of ad agencies' databases, right? Or these ad networks, so you're no longer targeted with ads that are tailored to you, you know, quoted. I think cybersecurity would become more and just more important. I see Microsoft, Palo Alto Networks, SentinelOne, and CrowdStrike being the main four contenders. I picked those four. I'm not sure if I mentioned this on in a podcast before, but I picked those four by going to each of those websites, and they all referenced each other. So it is a trope that these cybersecurity companies all sort of roast each other and sort of prove why they're better than each other on each of their sites. So, you know, there will usually be a tab of like why CrowdStrike on CrowdStrike's website, and you go there and it compares like CrowdStrike is better than Microsoft in these areas because CrowdStrike is better than SentinelOne in these areas because, and all these other companies are doing the same thing. And so instead of choosing a cybersecurity ETF, and that ETF having like 20 different companies, I'm just going to pick the four companies that sort of know about each other, that talk poop on each other, and hope that I'm right at least in one of those four. And I think that will, at the end of the day, be better than something that I have to pay like an expense ratio for, right? Like if you buy an ETF, some of that money goes to someone managing that ETF. You're not actually gaining all of the every cent of your profit. But if you do make your own ETF, aka just buy stocks in whatever you want or trade in whatever you want, then it's just a little bit better, right? In terms of flexibility, not having to pay the expense ratio. The tricky part is that you just now have to pray that you will perform better than someone that has studied this their entire life and picked out those stocks for a reason, which is arguably probably hard to do. I'm definitely doing this as more of like an experiment. I thought I was pretty clever when I thought of this. Again, that's Microsoft, SentinelOne, Palo Alto Networks, and CrowdStrike. These are all companies that know about each other, talk about each other in public, in the media, on earnings calls. And I really feel like, you know, collecting the group that talks about each other is probably better than a more generalized ETF. Moving along, I have Robinhood cash secured puts. I got 8 of them. They're currently red. I have the 23 cash secured puts, or the 23 strike cash secured puts. Robinhood's currently at 22.40, so with the premium included, I am still above my break even. So I'm still technically green on the trade if we fast forwarded to the last day right now. But Robinhood has been on a recent downtrend, but of course not worried as of yet. I mean, this in terms of like my main account is a very small position, so I'm not sweating it too much. Just moving further down, I see Costco. Right now I'm down on Costco by $773. I have 40 shares of Costco. I've been dollar cost averaging into this initial 25 share position, 5 shares at a time. I got my cost basis down to $8.95. I think previous or my first initial buy-in was at like $8.22. So 40 shares in, I'm $20 away from being at the money or, you know, break even. It feels good. Just slowly dollar cost averaging. I'm treating Costco as sort of like my glorified savings account. So just buying 5 shares every day that I feel like, I just want to maybe work on it a little bit. No set schedule there. Moving on, I do have, I forgot to mention, I do have Micron. So I'm trading more than just NVIDIA for semis. I'm also trading Micron or Mu, as I sort of call it sometimes. Micron, I am down on, just really slightly though, just $100 on a 20K position. So yeah, I probably just call that flat, to be honest. I also, yeah, I have also a grip of long puts on Kava. I wrote this entire paper on Kava. I still think Kava should go down. Will it go down? I have no idea. Do I need it to go down? No, but I do think it's a better than an educated guess that Kava deserves to go down than up. There's a lot of insider selling, which I wrote and took screenshots of. There was a double top that was being rejected. Again, yeah, insider selling, that was a big one. The PE ratio is insane. Their margins are really bad. They're in a constant need to expand and grow in this very like turbulent time where people are getting laid off. Kava's food, I went there. It's good. It's a complex taste. This taste is not scalable. I just don't think so. Like, people compare Kava to Chipotle all the time. I'm like, how could you even remotely come close to making that assumption? Have you tried the olives at Kava? Have you tried a Mediterranean olive? People would love guac and rice and beans way more than they would ever like the Mediterranean olive. I love the Mediterranean olive. When I go to like a Mediterranean place, when they give you that like fermented olive, I love that stuff. Okay, like sometimes I'll even like try to ask for extra with the pits. Okay, I love it. But I just know whenever I'm eating it, I'm like, dude, there's no way people like this. I know, and I get this some same sort of feedback from my fiance. She doesn't like all the Mediterranean olives, and she likes everything, right? She likes Chipotle too. So just the people that are comparing Kava to Chipotle, I just find it so disrespectful, because Chipotle is just like miles more sort of acceptable on the average palate than Kava. And Kava is also really expensive. Again, having a trouble in this economy, needing to prove itself, having to expand, having to have customer bases only grow from here at this very elevated price with insiders selling, with this recent technical pattern of a double top being rejected, I think there's more reason for Kava to go down than up. But again, I don't need it to go down. For example, this is a 2.7K position. I have, again, I'm managing a 333K portfolio. So let me just do the quick math there. 2.7 divided by 333. This is 0.08%. And lastly, I have bought in SPY puts this week. I bought two of them today and one earlier this week. I do see some weakness in SPY. I do think SPY has a fairly good chance of going down to 560. I think it's possible. The port strikes, I'll segue into that after I make this point about the SPY puts. I think in my past, I've been so reluctant to open long puts because I was so scared of just like losing on them. I would never open them, like ever. I think after learning to be a better loser this year, I think the fact that I'm able to buy long puts and execute them in a way where, hey, it looks like I receive double than what I lose. I just don't win more often than I lose. So I know that sounded really confusing. My average win on a long put is about $374. Okay, we'll just round that up so it's easy, okay? So it's about $400 every time I close a long put. Every time I lose $191. So let's just round that also up to $200. So on average, every time I close a long put, I make double of what I usually lose. And that's a good thing, right? That seems very good. You know, you'd say like, wow, Junie, yeah, if you're really that good, shouldn't you just do long puts all the time? My win percentage on this is 33%. And you might think, okay, maybe Junie's only done like three of these, okay? That's like a pretty rounded a third of a number, like, okay. But check this. I've done 39 of these long puts this year. 39. And I have an exact win percentage of 33.33%. Again, double the profit double the amount of what I lose. So with a win percentage of 33%, I make around $400. And every time I lose, I lose about $200. This goes to show that I should be putting on hedges when I think it's appropriate. Like, I feel like I have a good handle of not letting hedges get out of whack. For example, what if I had a 33% win percentage with like a $400 average gain, the same, but then my average loss was like $1,600 because I would always try to double down, triple down on making sure that my put eventually won, you know? So from this alone, I'm really starting to understand, hey, I actually can do long puts responsibly. In terms of profitability on long puts, I am in the 39 trades, I am down about, let me see. So I've lost $4,981, but I've gained $4,886. So if I subtract those, I am down on long puts on 39 of them, $115, which is really great. 'Cause if I go to my long puts right now, I have about three of them open. I'm currently down on this batch about $73. So still very in line. I'm not even close to my average size of loss yet. I have like two-thirds to go before I'm at the $200 mark. And it just feels good being able to have this data where this data was not apparent to me before because this feature was just implemented this year. I worked really hard to get everyone this sort of data. And just thank you to literally everyone that's been using the site recently. There's a huge uptick in traffic, and I think it has to do a lot with just how the market's been treating us, right? AI is just a little bit more predictable to trade than like maybe say 2022 or you know how 2023 was. It's just a blast to be able to trade alongside everybody live on the Twitch stream as well. I think that's breathing a lot of life into the website as well. Data is your friend. The front page or the dashboard of ThetaGain.com, when you're signed in, you get to see your Sharpe ratio, your profit factor. You get to see sort of your weekly performance on that bar graph. Use it, you know, reflect on your trades every now and then. You know, I'm here clicking on like some of my biggest bar graphs down. I'm seeing like, oh, right, yeah. This is where I sold Palo Alto a little bit too early. This is where I should have maybe exited this long put just a little bit later because it could have been much better or a much bigger gain. Like, you're only as good as your last trade, but you could definitely always improve what your next trade's outcome will be because you'll set systems for yourself based on how you've lost before. You notice that like, hey, you know, your average profit on per time you open a long call is much smaller than your average loss, then you know for certain you are not getting your appropriate reward for the amount of risk you're taking. You're taking winners way too early if your average profit per trade is much smaller than your average loss. So there's all these different indicators that can really help you define just how successful you are. Because we all loved a comeback story of like, hey, I was down on this call by like $3,000. And at the very end of it, it turned green by $20. Hell yeah. But then you start developing those bad habits of like, hey, as soon as this breaks even and turns green, I'm going to take it off the table. You just now risk these thousands of dollars just to break even. And so one of my favorite quotes for this year, again, inspired by Tom Hoogard from Best Loser Wins, is we are here to make money, not to break even. That is still the theme. That has to be the best theme to close out this year because I'm fully aware that, you know, the port strike will end eventually. We don't know when, but it could get scary, hence the puts that I bought. But that is, seems very ripe for when we end the election, that's a lot of volatility gone. The port strike ending, that's a lot of volatility gone. And maybe we don't hear anything about the Israel-Iran stuff for a while, and that's volatility gone. That sounds absolutely ripe for a Christmas rally when people are putting back in money into the stock market. Maybe they're talking about how rates are coming down, they should move money into the stock market instead of keeping it in their savings account where they were previously getting 5.5%. Maybe now they're getting 5%, or maybe now 4.5%. People are going to be eager to start moving money around, and as soon as there's a low volatility environment where stocks are more predictable, you bet that people are going to get back in. So it's just about, you know, risk reward. You're here to make money. If you didn't want to make money and you wanted guaranteed gains and you didn't want any of the stress, just put it in a savings account or just put it in SPY. But if you're doing anything else, you got to make sure you're being paid worth your time. And speaking of being paid worth your time, holy moly, dude, the port strikes. Dude, shout out to just the Twitch chat earlier this week. We saw and learned about the port strike, I think, before a lot of other people did. I'm going to be honest. We saw the main dude, the scary mob guy. We saw him talking on a video that had 40,000 views. I'm sure that video has like hundreds of thousands of views now, if not like a million point something, because I see that clip everywhere now. We saw that really early, and I could just tell we were super early. But honestly, the market has not gone down all too much. The estimates from all these different banks say that, you know, maybe it's like 2 weeks max. Whether or not the strike is warranted is, honestly, I think unless if you work there and you're the company, it's hard to have a very fair opinion, because it really just depends on, I think, where you are in life and how you see society is going as a whole. Because what's happening right now is there are people that work on the eastern coast of America, and that's where most of our shipping goods come in. We have a west coast port, but it's not as active as the east coast. And the East Coast port, it has this alliance, the ILA, where these port workers have a union. And they feel like they are being currently underpaid and they are at risk for automation taking their jobs. So they decided to go on strike. What they want is about like a 70% pay increase, or it could be more, just a little bit less. What they have been offered by these companies so far is a 50% pay increase, and this is paid over like the next like 5-6 years. But then they also added another clause where they said, hey, we don't want any automation in our ports because that will take our jobs. Now, here is where I either make you my enemy or you like what I say and you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I have said some pretty in the middle things before about a lot of politics and issues, because, you know, this podcast was basically created right before quarantine, right before COVID, and all through COVID, and, you know, every year after that till now. So whenever something like this happens, you know, there's often times where there's like this disgruntled person that's like, oh, I cannot believe you're siding with the company, or you're siding with the store that's getting looted. Don't you understand this? Dude, this topic is so I don't know what the right answer is, but I have an opinion and I feel like it should be respected just as much as I respect yours. I don't think anybody is right or wrong. It's just going to depend on how they negotiate the terms and how they settle the strike and agreement. For me, I personally think, I would say that it is unproductive as a society to not make the ports automated, okay? From a naive point of view, okay, this is coming from a young adult living in Orange County in a one-bedroom apartment that does this for a living. Okay, I speak into a microphone, I'm on a webcam, and I build websites. You don't see my hands are smooth, okay? I don't got those working man hands. I don't think I could lift like a shipping crate on my back and you know, everything that's necessary to make the country run, okay? I can't do that job, but those people can do that job. I still think it should be automated. There are ports that are not in America, especially in Asian countries, where the ports have heavy machinery and are automated to a point where they're being more efficient. Okay, efficiency is great. I love efficiency. I love safety as well. So if this means that the workers did not need to lift heavy boxes, and maybe, you know, they didn't need to do certain tasks that were more dangerous for humans, I'm all for it, especially if it makes the world just more productive. I'm down. The part that sucks and the part that's not humanitarian is that the fact that they will lose jobs, okay? So you know how I said that I wanted automation? It's like, I wish there was a world where they could get paid, but also have automation. There was a pretty smart comment in Twitch from one of the regulars. Don't remember who said it, but you know who you are. They mentioned, why don't you just give the workers like shares of stock? You know, make the company as efficient as possible. But you know, they'll be taken care of in the event that, like, hey, you know, automation does eventually take over their job. But you know, they'll be good in training it, keeping it good, or you know, building it well, so it lasts a long time, improves company margins, and what, you get paid to what, do nothing? You know, something like that sounds pretty cool, right? Where something is in tandem with automation. I think it's kind of like, you know, I'm thinking about like an example. It's kind of like people that work at a phone book company that are like, hey, don't, we're going to go on strike. We're going to keep everyone's number on private so internet companies can't use us, because we need everyone to keep reading the phone book. That doesn't make sense to me, because it just much be easier just put it on the internet, or make it searchable, put it on technology, put it on an iPad. I don't know. It doesn't cost like trees to do, you know, it's not on paper no more. Like, there are many benefits by automating it, digitizing it, or doing whatever. It's a little bit less humanitarian, because again, yeah, I get it. It's people that don't have jobs. But you're literally listening to someone that doesn't have a job right now, right? I feel like, of all people, especially if you feel like I'm wrong and you have a job, no, bro. Like, I got laid off. I don't have a job. I still think automation is good. It's the fact that, like, we don't have universal basic income, and I get it. Like, you're throwing up. You're like, how could you even mention that? That sounds sinful. It's super bad. If we can make it work, I think that's just genuinely the best move forward. But it's so difficult. There, like, everyone needs to agree on it, and someone needs to champion it where a majority of the people want it to happen. It's a tough thing that's going to need to come by. But like, the fact that people are not wanting automation to happen or things to be more efficient is worrisome, because again, I just draw parallels on the people that might have been working at the phone book companies that are just like, oh man, we're just gonna hide all of this because you guys need to read our phone books so we keep our jobs. The world is moving forward, and it sucks that it impacts people that are of the working class and are a little bit older even sometimes. But here's another thing on top, is that this industry is very mob driven. Like, I mean, like, Italian kill you and put you in the trunk sort of stuff. You do your own due diligence on it, but you need to basically know someone that already works there and or be a family member or be a very trusted friend in order to pick up one of these positions. Also, while they do already get paid more than a median income of the U.S. household, they get paid a lot of overtime. A lot of these workers are making over 200K plus a year. So they're asking for more, and I love it. Be a little bit greedy or ask for what you want. I am all about that. But when you start talking about like, hey, don't do this because automation is about to take it away, like, where do we draw the line? You know, like, automation is good. That's what the Industrial Revolution essentially did. You know, like, all these factories came up, made, you know, a lot of these processes that people did by hand way faster. And it's just that next layer up from that. You know, talking about like McDonald's, dude, I don't care if a robot makes my McChicken. You know, in fact, I probably feel like it's safer because they're not like spitting in it or doing anything weird to it, or globbing that giant pile of mayonnaise on it and then punching the top of the bun with their fist. You know, it's like, there are other jobs being impacted by automation, and this topic of people working versus robots and automated processes working is going to be a very interesting sort of topic when it comes to these discussions going on for probably the next decade. You know, we're seeing a very wide shift in layoffs that have happened already. And whenever this next hiring cycle comes about, yeah, There's going to be a new emphasis on just what types of roles are going to be hired for. You know, maybe we see less of what can be automated. Maybe we see less recruiters being on the market because one recruiter can manage like six different robo recruiters at one time, or robo AI bots that send out emails on their behalf. Where, you know, typically before you probably needed six different recruiters for those six different pipelines, but now you just need one recruiter managing six robo pipelines. You know, you can also see this in customer support, where you needed teams of customer support agents working remote in India or the Philippines. But now it's even cheaper than that. You just create your own AI chatbot that can handle returns for you automatically or disputes for you automatically. And instead of paying like an entire team's worth of salary or hours, you now just pay a subscription for like $30 a month to run your own chatbot. It's insane, you know, of like how this new hiring cycle will turn out. Again, this is coming from someone that loves people. I love people. I want the best for people. I also want the world to be productive, and I want the world to just continue on with this normal trajectory, being mindful of being a human and making sure humans are taken care of. So that's why I also mentioned, hey, I want automation to be here, but I also wish UBI was here. I wish the people that would get laid off from automation could still be taken care of while they are alleviated from a dangerous job, which is why they got sort of paid like that in the first place. It's hard working. Maybe they could take a little bit of that off, or maybe work part-time doing the same job, but have automation cover a lot of that job. There's a happy medium somewhere. And lastly, before ending today's episode, I have to say that being laid off and having a chance to do my own thing has really given me a chance to be able to really reflect and just take notice of like how long I used to work and how much energy I used to put in to my work. You know, all the stressful days and all the sort of stressful projects and deadlines I've ever had to do. You know, the, I don't know, maybe some conflicts I have with coworkers, or, you know, even the more exciting long days, the happy days of working 9 to 5, it is really mind blowing just of how much time that actually takes away from your sort of life. I think everyone should work in some capacity. You don't have to be necessarily paid too much. If you get paid and make break even and get by, I think that's amazing. If you can work and just make a little bit, I think that's amazing. But I think everyone in their life should work. Everyone should have a purpose. Being laid off has really let me just remember from a different context, because I'm in a different context than I was before, just like, wow, I spent so much time working on that. I remember just being so stressed, and it was like, for what? Like, why was I so stressed? Like, what was so like urgent? I was fine. I was good. But it's hard to remember that. And I know a lot of you that are listening right now, you guys do have a job, okay? And let this just serve as like as a reminder that the situation that you're in where you have a job is very good, okay? Very, very good. I've had two emails in the last probably month, maybe like once every 2 weeks, of someone asking me like what I think about, you know, doing my own thing. Should they do their own thing? That they don't like their job. This is a moment where I just want to remind anybody: if you have a job right now, you are doing very good. Okay, this extra drive that you have, that you, where you want to like, oh, I want to quit my job and I want to do what you're doing, Junie, and this and that. Dude, what I'm doing right now is stressful as heck. Like, I gotta pay my own health insurance. I feel like I want to like rip my own eyeballs out every time I pay that thing. It sucks. I hate it. It's a very stressful feeling having to pay for all my utilities and my rent. I'm able to do it, but it's taken me like 5 years to get to this point of my Patreon growing, my, I don't know, whatever the $100 I make from Twitch a month, and you know, marketing ship partner deals with different companies. it's taken a long time for me to get here, and I still feel like I'm barely scraping by. Okay, I'm like barely able to save now, but I'm still on that trajectory. What I did a lot of the time when I was thinking about doing my own thing, you know, when I was employed, was I would, you know, end my workday, I'd be stressed, I'd be exhausted, but I would still work on Theta Gang, right? I would record the Theta Gang podcast sometimes at like 11 p.m. because it was, you know, it had to be done, and I was like, maybe I needed, yeah, maybe I couldn't do it over the weekend. I needed to do it that Friday or something. There's many occasions where I would just find myself intrinsically motivated working on something after work. It was easy for me. Like, I enjoy that process. It gave me a lot of purpose. I felt like I had a lot of purpose at work because I really enjoyed my coworkers. I could give like a rat's butt on like what I actually worked on. I really just loved my coworkers always. That's like my main focus wherever I go. If I don't like the coworkers, if I can't vibe with anybody, I'll leave. I haven't had that happen before, but I can imagine a scenario where I would. Like, if I just didn't like my team or my team didn't like me, I pick up on the vibes and I just go. It's like, okay, cool. This isn't going to work out. I'm good. But every time I join a company, I am just surrounded by so many nice and kind people. I think that's maybe one of the things I sort of vet for when I'm in the interview process for somewhere that I'm interviewing for. I like ask like, hey, can I meet some members of the team and stuff? And I've always gotten that request handled. Like, I've always been able to meet the team. And so working with a coworker and making sure you feel like you're at a home and you're within your community at work is, I think, most important. You don't need to quit that to start your own thing. Just do it after work. Do it before work. Do it at night when your wife is sleeping or when your husband is sleeping or when you finally tucked in your kid or your kids, okay? Like, you don't need to necessarily quit your job. When you make a good amount of income, when it's replaceable, when it's responsible, you can quit your job and focus on it full time. Or if you get laid off, then work on it full time. But you don't need to quit your job now. This is just a reminder that if you have a job right now, you're in a really good spot. The job market is still, it's still pretty cold. I'll see occasional posts of people that get jobs on LinkedIn, but these are from, you know, some of the best engineers that I know, you know, that I would say, I would never imagine they got laid off in the first place, that would never have a problem finding a job, and they got jobs. So that always breathes a little bit of confidence in me in case if, you know, Theta Gang went south or, you know, I had different ambitions, I needed to save up even more money or something, then yeah, I would feel confident in my ability to get a job because I'm seeing the people that I'm close to also getting a job. And we've always had the same sort of like track history of being able to join really good companies and being able to exit and all this sort of stuff. So that's that. Today's episode was really just, you know, a summary of where my portfolio is at. You know, talking a little bit about nuclear and a little bit about the port strike. Very contextual podcast. Felt very good just talking it through. We have one more trading day left in this week, tomorrow, Friday. And yeah, we'll see where we go from there. Thank you so much for listening. I always appreciate having a platform of people that like to listen to what I have to say. I feel very grateful. I'll see everyone whenever the next podcast episode comes out. And thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye. From what just started out as just an idea, then learning how to trade options, then building a logging platform, then partnering with TasyTrade is so surreal to me. If you'd like to trade on TasyTrade, you can see the show description from my referral link or use ThetaGain referral code, one word, all caps, when signing up to help me and support the website, podcast, and stream. This podcast, the website, and stream are all made possible because of my patrons at patreon.com/ThetaGain. Signing up helps keep the services up and alive, as well as pay my own personal bills. I do the podcast, website, and stream full-time as my primary source of income. I feel grateful to be able to do this full-time and focus on providing the best service possible for free. The podcast, website, and stream are all free, and it'll stay that way. Signing up for Patreon gives you a few perks, though, so check it out again at patreon.com/ThetaGang if you're interested in helping support. All right, huge shout out to my supporters on patreon.com/thetagang. These are, again, the users that allow me to be able to do this full time. It's the reason why I'm able to stream during your work day. It's the reason why I'm able to work on the website as much as I am right now. And it's the reason why, really, all of this is still going. So huge thank you to everyone that I'm about to name off on this list. And also, thank you to everyone that's donated or, you know, been a patron before. Like, everything counts. Everything still counts. And I really appreciate it. Again, that's patreon.com/thetagang if you want to be on this list. A huge shout out to AJ Tarheel, Alexander Kerm, Andy V, Arfman, Asha Kabat, Avrillian, Butch the Thug, Benadushi, Bearded Savage, Big Dillo, Ben Z, Bustin' Justin, Can't Make Money RL, Chicken Dinner, Clutch, Coop, Dang High, Denume 9000, Desserts, EDC, Espresso Bean, Fancy Wolf, Florida Man, Grandpa 95, Gruffalo, Husk P, Jimmy Gill, Joe Quirt, J Perkins 86, Kaput, KJ Martin, Loido, Lord Skeletor, Los Pepes, LPL, Luca Badur, Maestro XC, Major, Maltman 1856, McFly, Meh, Mods, Mr. Integrity, MX7, Nala, NSYS 88, A Rooster, R. Schmitty, R. Rustier, Slow Motion, Statistically Random, Steve Katsy, Stephanie 10, Strategy 28, Suede Sly, Sumatrix, Tecomi Amo, The Jester, Theta Collector, Travella, Turbo Ricky, T Wall 3252, Tyler LM97, Upstream Puddle, Vegeta Plank, YT Young Rich, and ZKMSZ. Yeah, I mean, this week has been pretty flat, I'd say, for my portfolio. A little bit more down than flat, but overall, not overreacting, not closing things for dramatic losses or gaining a lot of gains. It's been a pretty boring week, and with that boring week, instead of over-trading, I've dedicated a lot of just looking more into like nuclear stocks and forming my own opinion on them. I think they were the flavor more like 2 or 3 weeks ago, so I'm a little bit late to the party, but I found a few price points that I like that I've been trading for VST and CEG. Patrons can see those trades, of course, on the website and in the Discord. Feel pretty good with my portfolios at. I feel very balanced. I am on the lookout for the Iran Israel war stuff just cooling down. Also looking for the port strike to end at whatever time. I think both events eventually lead the market up. You know, of course, we can always keep going down. Maybe if tensions rise in the Middle East, or maybe the strike lasts longer than expected, but those are a little bit, I think, less likely than, you know, things calming down or the strike ending. The Christmas rally is still really up for grabs right now. I think it has a better chance of happening than ever, especially since we're approaching a new all-time high, trying to break out of this, like, what pattern is this? Let me see, SPY stock. I know that we're reaching multiple highs. Yeah, this like triple top that we're sitting at right now. We had a top in 2024. Oh, wow, all these are in 2024. We had one in July of this year, August this year, and we just recently hit one in the very late end of September this year. I think a Christmas rally can set us up for the next wave of the next high. It just makes a lot of sense. There's not really much reason for the stock market to go down, I think, other than just like mass layoffs randomly happening. But we're in a rate cut cycle, which also feels like it would incentivize the market to keep going up and maybe incentivize more employees to be hired. But of course, automation AI means the job pool of what people get hired is different now. And there could be trickle effects if not enough people are rehired from losing a job that is no longer considered like a skilled labor job where it's not in threat of automation. These are, again, this is not read off a script. I'm literally just saying things like out of my head right now. It makes sense to me. Maybe you have a different point of view, and that's honestly just amazing. I think that's what I love about the stock market is you can really justify just about anything, but it's up to, are you able to execute the trade is what matters the most. It doesn't matter what you think is the best strategy or what companies are the best or what you think of this technical pattern. If you suck at trading, you suck at trading. You can't handle your gains. Maybe you sell too early, or you can't handle your losses and you sell too late. none of it matters unless if you're a good trader. Yeah, like how well you manage your emotions, how well you manage your portfolio, what hedges you have in place, what stop losses you have in place. Are stop losses even good? Is hedging even good? What is diversification? None of it matters unless if you are good. And how do you know if you're good? First of all, are you green? Second, you took it into your own hands. Are you being a spy? The stock market is a beautiful, beautiful place. It's just like the ocean. So majestic, so beautiful, but damn, can it run right through you? It does not care about your emotions. It doesn't care about your feelings. It looks beautiful on sunny days, but on stormy, windy, wavy days, it can take you out like no problem. That tide is very strong when it wants to go against you. So ominous analogies aside, yeah, the stock market and all the different perspectives that you could look at it, it's what makes or breaks you. You know, how you think about the stock market, I think, is largely affected by the group you're surrounded by. If you all believe that the stock market is overbought, none of you will buy because you guys will all reaffirm each other's thoughts. That's why I think what I love about the Discord that I'm a part of, you can join at patreon.com/thetagang, is that we have people of all different types of styles and trading. Despite being like the Theta Gang Discord, we have a lot of different perspectives. And, you know, the people that hold those perspectives even change their perspectives from time to time. So it is just a very healthy balance, and it's one of the more reasons why I feel like I haven't lost as much as some of my peers. And sometimes it's maybe what gives me the upper hand edge of like strangers on the internet as well, just because, you know, having this balanced point of view is good. And it's because I feel like we all moderate ourselves pretty well, in a sense that we're all very polite, and we're all just really learning from each other. On the internet, though, because it's the Wild West, you tend to communicate or look for actions or comments that reinforce your own views, right? Because all you can ask for in an open void is something that you can cling on to. And so when you're sort of like collaborating or trying to, ask for advice, ask questions in open space, you're usually only going to get met by hostile people that have the other side, or people that just like blindly also believe in what you also believe in. It's hard to get a very healthy balance unless if you're really, I guess, like emotionally disciplined enough to really try to find someone on the other side and have a meaningful conversation with them. But can you, just me saying that feels so unrealistic on the internet, you know? So that is one of the many benefits I find from just being able to be with a Discord that is very well balanced. So I think that's it. Not that much of personal stuff for today's 1% section. Shout out to everyone that's been sending nice messages to me through email. Been getting a lot of those recently. I don't know what's been happening, but I think email is becoming more popular, boys. So yeah, shout out to people that have been saying nice things. And also, yeah, I mean, I would say that because I have really nothing to mention, like really everything in my life right now is on a very positive trajectory. And I mean that like in the most non-corporate way possible. I just mean that in like a sense that I truly feel like right now in this moment, I have nothing to complain about. And I feel like there's so much weight that's not on my shoulders that I feel more willing and able to like just listen to people more and be present. But I've talked about that before, so I just don't want to say the same thing over and over again, but I'm still in that same mindset. So I hope that I could give you some of my positive energy right now, giving it to you. I'm tapping the microphone right now. Giving it to you, carry this on, maybe open the door for that old lady that's about to walk into the coffee shop behind you, you know, a little tap. Whatever else might be cliche, but just be a better person. Try to always be a better person than you were yesterday. And I'll see everybody next week. Bye bye.